And welcome to another installment of Mercenary Musings Radio, an exclusive audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been?
I've been well. I'm in St. Louis for Game 6 of the World Series, so I'm hoping my beloved Cardinals can take it to Game 7.
Well, our fingers are crossed for you. I know the Cardinals certainly weren't expected to be where they are today, are they? I mean, this is a great surprise for Cardinals fans to be in the World Series.
Well, they made a monumental comeback in the month of September, unparalleled. So they're two games from winning the World Series, so we're all very happy.
Okay, we're pulling for your cards. Mickey, we wanted to take a fresh look at copper for this edition of the program. I think it's a great time for a checkup on copper because this is a metal that has seen the price go on quite the ride. At the time of this recording, we have copper down about 27%, Mickey, from the record it reached way back in mid-February. However, over the course of just two trading sessions this week, it has bounced up 13%, a volatile ride. What is your assessment of the movement that we've seen in copper of late?
Much like my Cardinals, this is almost unparalleled. Copper is very much tied into world economics. We've talked about the copper has a PhD in economics. And, and what we've seen over the last 6 weeks or so, we saw a much-needed correction, a correction that I called for way back in January because I didn't think $4.50 copper was a sustainable. We had a couple of small corrections in the mid-spring and mid-summer, 15%, but this was a very healthy one at plus 30%, and now we're seeing just intense volatility, as you allude to. The price got down almost to $3 and bounced to $3.50. I think it closed at $3.40 or so today.
Okay, 2 points as a follow-up. What did you see back in January that had you bang on with your call at that time? You know, you told people that that this price cannot be sustained. You said that it was going to be moving lower. What did you see at that time? And as a follow-up to that, did you see evidence of any short covering perhaps as being a major factor in this latest move up in the price?
Well, to address your first point, what I saw was basically supply-demand fundamentals pretty much in balance. You know, there were a bunch of analysts of this year that were calling for a supply deficit over the year, but when you looked at their numbers, they were calling for a 4 to 6% supply deficit, something on the order of 3 to 8 days of consumption, and that's minuscule. You know, there's more copper stockpiled generally throughout the world than those sorts of numbers. I mean, we're looking usually at something lately, 15 days world stockpile. So I saw a basic supply-demand fundamental balance for this year with maybe a little bit of deficit, maybe a little bit of surplus. But that in itself did not call for a record copper price, in my opinion. So it was very easy to call a correction. You just never know when they're going to come in. As far as short covering in a market, certainly this latest bounce is probably due as people have started coming back in the market. There were a lot of shorts, drove the copper price down to $3. A lot of that was basically perturbations in China. And as people start seeing the market looking increasingly bullish, then they'll pile back in long on copper.
Okay, you mentioned China. It's responsible for, I believe, about 40% of total global copper demand. You and I have talked about the situation in China before, the stockpiling of copper in that country. I've read one story that states Chinese imports of refined copper in September alone were up 17%, but it's a country where it's rather difficult to get a firm handle in terms of what exactly is taking place, isn't it?
Well, it very much is, and you can look at the Shanghai inventories, and they don't make a lot of sense a lot of times with what we get with economic data out of China, and a lot of it has to do with speculators and stockpiling. And I think we talked a year and a half ago about pig farmers stockpiling copper.
Right,
well,
yeah.
A lot of that with the record copper price got liquidated, so that probably served to drive the price down. The basically fundamental or let me put it this way, the fundamental view from China has not changed all that much. You know, mm-hmm. We're still using a lot of copper in the world, and demand increases year over year. And metals markets are driven. They're probably the most speculative and markets in the world. They're driven by fear and greed and mm-hmm. panic, and sometimes they just go up and down willy-nilly.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot of fear and greed and panic in the markets of late. You know, we've got ongoing concerns of perhaps the U.S. economy slipping back into recession. That's debatable. Big questions hanging over Europe. And Chinese economic growth has been slowing. But all of that is really kind of short-term problems, aren't they? Longer-term, Mickey, if we take a longer-term view of the demand for copper, just how do you see it playing out?
Well, I think it's going to continue. It's 4% year over year growth since 1900. I think we can depend on that. Mm-hmm. You know, we see these kind of wild swings. If you look at a 5-year chart of copper, it went negative parabolic. You know, a lot of people think when markets go parabolic, it means it's on the upside and then a downfall. But a parabola can be both upside down and right side up. So, and from July of 2008 to April of 2010, we saw basically a negative parabolic move in copper in a recovery. And now we've seen from June of 2010 to October 2011, we've seen a parabolic rise and fall of copper. I think that's predictable. That's the fundamentals of capitalism. The fact that copper has a PhD in economics, I think that will continue. I think the growth on a year-to-year basis will continue. I think that the fact that we cannot find and develop enough copper to mm-hmm. meet demand on a yearly basis will continue. You know, we use the equivalent of a Bingham Canyon in copper, one of the world's giant copper deposits, Bingham Canyon, Utah, mining's continuously since 1903. Mm-hmm. We use that much copper every year, so we need to find more copper. We're mining lower and lower grades. I think that will continue. So the more that the short-term story changes, mm-hmm. my opinion, the more the long-term outlook stays the same. When people throughout the world turn on the light switch, they want the lights to come on.
Right.
And that is increasingly apparent throughout the world, and you can't deliver electricity without copper.
Indeed. Talk to us a little bit, Mickey, about operating costs and the profit margins right now for copper producers with copper at its current price level. How are the producers coping in terms of their operating costs and their margins? Is this a healthy environment right now for them?
Well, I think so, and as we have currencies have gotten devalued throughout the world, of course, operating costs will go up. It is my guesstimate right now, and I don't have any hard data from this year, but certainly I have hard data from last year, that operating costs worldwide are probably about $2 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
If you add in CapEx, and this is a capital-intensive industry, the copper industry, and the usual depreciation, amortization, taxes, et cetera, I think the all-in cost for the average copper producer is probably somewhere between $2.50 and $3 a pound.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point of view, I don't think copper can get below $3 a pound and stay there very long, because then you're going to have production come off. But with copper at $3.50 to $4, which would be my longer-term view, copper producers are doing quite well.
Okay, and wrapping up then, can we safely assume that you're saying this is not a bad time at all to invest in this area of the base metals market?
Well, I think so. I think it is good, and we look at merger and acquisition activity over the last 6 months or so, and we've had four major acquisitions
mm-hmm.
Of juniors by bigger companies. Equinox taken out by Barrick, Far West taken out by Capstone, Peregrine Metals taken out by Stillwater, and the latest Anvil Mining taken out by a Chinese group. So when we're in this M&A activity, it's always a good time to go in and find a fundamentally strong advanced explorer or developer and speculate that they they may become a takeout target in the near future.
Okay, we'll wrap it up on that note. Mickey, great to talk to you. Next time out, what do you want to focus on? Or do you want to leave the listener kind of guessing?
Well, I'm focused right now on the World Series, Rob, so why don't we say that we'll just do something timely in our next show, something on the markets that's in the world of commodities that looks timely.
Okay, sounds good, and I'm hoping that you'll be a happy fellow when we chat next time. We're pulling for the Cardinals. Thanks a lot, Mickey. Good luck with your baseball team.
Well, thank you very much, Rob.
Okay, that is Mickey Fult, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.